Good afternoon. Calling State Affairs to order at 3:03 p.m. Tuesday, March 16th, 2021, in the Max Grunberg Room. We have four members present: Representative Klayman, Representative Story, Representative Kaufman, and myself, Chair Christ Tompkins. Welcome, Representative Thompson. We have two items on today's agenda: House Bill 44 from Representative Thompson, and then House Bill 106 from the Governor. Second hearing of House Bill 44. I want to get through all the invited testimony. I want to open public testimony and then set an amendment deadline for action and discharge on Thursday. And then want to get to a proper first hearing of House Bill 106, which was on the agenda previously, but we bumped because of time constraints. So we'll start with House Bill 44. And we have Lynette Burge, staff to Rep. Thompson, online. And we have invited testimony. This is a reminder for the committee's reference. We adopted a committee substitute for House Bill 44. So the version of record is version B, which was adopted at the last committee meeting. And we will, at this point in time, proceed to invite a testimony for House Bill 44, unless Representative Thompson, you'd like to make any comments before we go there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Once again, to be before you with House Bill 44, I'm Steve Thompson, representing House District 2. And I just wanted to bring it up to make sure that everybody has the legal opinion on the difference between shall and may that was presented. I mean, we have that legal, and I think it was in everybody's packet.
We do, yeah. In fact, I think it's on all members' desks right now. But yeah, helpful, and at least by my review of the memo, I think it spoke to the question at hand.
Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Rep. Thompson. Okay, onwards to invited testimony. I'm going to ask the invited testifiers keep their testimony to between 2 or 3 minutes for economy's sake, and I also want to note that Representatives Tarr and Vance and Eastman all joined us at 3:05 p.m. So we'll start with Karen Brewer-Tarver, Alaska Board of Public Accountancy. Karen, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your invited testimony in 2 to 3 minutes.
Hello, this is Karen Tarver, and I live in Juneau, Alaska. And Mr. Chair and committee, thank you for letting me testify regarding House Bill 44. I'm a CPA and partner with LG Rafels, a Juneau-based accounting firm. In March of 2020, I completed my second four-year term on the State Board of Accountancy. While on the board, I was chair twice and very involved in the development of the proposed changes you have before you today. I'm currently a member of the State Society of CPAs Legislative Committee, and so I'm testifying today as both past chair and current society member. This bill is a product of a project started several years ago by the board. The board worked with the American Institute of CPAs, or AICPA, and National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, or NASBA, as well as the State Society of CPAs on these changes. The Uniform Accountancy Act, or UAA, is a model licensing law created by the AICPA and NASBA to provide for a uniform approach to regulation of the accounting professions. It is used by the 50-plus licensing jurisdictions regulating CPAs as a template, modifying it as needed for their jurisdiction. The Alaska Board worked with James Cox of the AICPA to facilitate a complete review of the Alaska accounting statutes and regulations compared to UAA several years ago. For the last 2 to 3 years, the board has reviewed each identified difference in detail, evaluating it for Alaska. During this review process, we involved licensees through focus groups held in Fairbanks, Gurwood, and Anchorage. We coordinated with the State Society and AICPA to provide education on existing statutes, reviewed the differences with UAA, and gathered feedback from the licensees, as well as had hours of discussion on what made sense for Alaska's accounting profession and regulatory requirements. The focus group feedback helped the board determine where licensees had concerns and what worked through issues through further education and evaluation of the impact of the proposed changes. We are unaware of any objections by licensees related to the proposed changes that have not already been addressed. The board narrowed the change down to 3 main issues, at which time we met with Representative Thompson and his staff and went over these and our reasons of why they're beneficial. These include revision of the out-of-state exemption. This reduces barriers to entry by providing services across state borders while providing the board increased oversight to out-of-state firms providing accounting services in Alaska. Adoption of the term firm. This streamlines the statutes, removing several pages of duplicative wording that was previously included for each business type and provides greater transparency of a firm. Updated the old quality review terminology with the currently used peer review term. In addition, the bill updates and adds definitions to increase clarity as well as new terminology introduced by the bill. Thank you again for the time today. I'm available for questions as needed.
Thank you, Ms. Brewer-Tarver. Couple of quick follow-ups from me. Did you say that you're not aware of any objections from current licensees to the current language encompassed in House Bill 44?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Thank you. Just as a personal aside, I believe your firm does my taxes, and I have a lot of regard for Tyler Emerson. Any other questions
from, thank you.
From the table? Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins, and through the chair, thank you, Ms. Tarver, for your work on this. And when you said that you are not aware of anyone who, firm who was opposed to this, can you tell me how you reached out to firms and helped to grow awareness of the revisions that you are making?
Yes, I will. So, as I mentioned, we did focus groups both in Fairbanks, Gurwood, Anchorage. We also worked through the State Society, and they put information in their newsletter that goes out to their members, which include the majority of CPAs licensed in Alaska. And so we made a coordinated effort to get the information out there as far as the proposed changes. And this dates back 2 to 3 years ago when we really started on the process, and it's been kept current. They've been kept current on the changes. And through those feedback groups, those focus groups, essentially, as people expressed concerns, we would go back, evaluate those, and then provide new information. And so I guess just to make sure I clearly understood, we're unaware of any objections that we haven't already addressed through those focus groups or through individual coming to the board and presenting their concerns.
Thank you for that information.
Not seeing further questions, thank you, Ms. Brewer-Tarver, for your time, and we'll looks like you might be able to stay online if there are additional questions. There are three listed as possible resources for questions, but perhaps also invited testimony. We have Leslie Schmitz, Tom Neal, and Don Rulian, and maybe I'll go in that order. Leslie Schmitz. Just because of time constraints, give you the opportunity for any invited testimony, but just sort of keep in mind that we've also had the benefit of the sectional analysis from Lynette Burge and Ms. Brewer-Tarver's testimony. So if there's anything in addition that would be helpful to add to the record, you're welcome to contribute at this time.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is, for the record, my name is Leslie Schmitz, and I am the current I'm currently serving as the chair of the State Board of Accountancy, and certainly what Ms. Tarver spoke to previously, the board is totally in agreement with. We've worked very hard on this bill. Karen, during her term on the board, worked very hard on this, and she spent several years doing it. As she said, and just to keep it brief, we've worked very diligently to make it transparent to the licensees and also in what we feel is our obligation to protect the public by having our statutes be transparent and so that everyone understands them. The UAA, the Uniform Accountancy Act, is an evergreen model, as Karen had mentioned, and the board believes that this bill will closely follow the UAA language to enhance public protection and modernize terminology referenced in the law. While we know that this appears to be a large bill, there, as Karen mentioned, there's only a few main topics which she's already discussed with you. So, you know, in order to keep things brief, the Board of Accountancy thanks you for hearing this bill, and I also can be available for questions as needed. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Schmitz. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move to the next person in the invited testifiers list, Tom Neal, who I think we had the benefit of hearing from, providing some answers in the last hearing. Mr. Neal, if you have any additional testimony to add to the record beyond what's been contributed by Ms. Brewer-Tarver and Ms. Schmitz, please put yourself on record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the committee. My name is Thomas Neal. I'm a CPA. I'm an audit principal in a small CPA firm in Seattle, Washington. I've worked in public accounting for about 40 years, and last summer I finished a 9-year term on the Washington State Board of Accountancy. I also chair the AICPA's Uniform Accountancy Act Committee, and I'm representing the Institute today to express support for House Bill 44, which modernizes Alaska's accountancy statute. As mentioned, the Uniform Accountancy Act is a model act whose goal is to provide the 55 licensing jurisdictions in the U.S. a consistent framework for regulation of the profession. Over the last few years, the accounting profession has faced a number of challenges that have impacted the ability of businesses to access needed professional services. And a major concept addressed in House Bill 44, that of firm mobility, addresses one of these challenges. When the concept of mobility was first contemplated more than 20 years ago, there was concern that CPA firms already licensed might lose business to out-of-state firms. But my firsthand experience with this in the state of Washington proved that this did not occur. Our firm has received more requests to provide services in the last 3 years than ever before, many from out-of-state businesses who are having to extend their reach to find a service provider. Concerns over the perceived loss of revenue to the state were also expressed and also have proved to not be true. When a firm crosses the state line, depending on state tax regulations, a firm may have to file and pay business, occupation, corporate, and individual taxes as applicable to the state for the revenue that's earned there, as well as payroll taxes for the time that staff spends in that state. Currently, there are 30 states who have enacted firm mobility statutes, and I've yet to hear any negative feedback from states, firms, or clients. And I think the reason is this. One of the key advantages of firm mobility is that Alaska businesses will have access to professional services that they may not have had before. For small business to grow and thrive, they need access to CPAs and firms willing to provide those services. Mobility allows a firm to do just that, to come into Alaska and serve your businesses. And the Alaska Mobility Bill has been well crafted to mirror both the Uniform Accountancy Act, that I'm well familiar with, as well as to position Alaska CPAs to move forward and serve businesses.
Thank you very much, Mr. Neal, for that testimony. Helpful to have a national and comparative perspective. And seeing no questions, I'm going to move to the final invited testifier, Don Rulian. And apologies if I'm mispronouncing the last name, but please feel free to put yourself on record and present any invited testimony.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify before you regarding HB 44. My name is Don Rulian. I'm a CPA and a founding member of Rulian and Associates, LLC, based in Anchorage. In March of 21, I completed my second 4-year term on the State Board of Public Accountancy also. While on the board, I served as chair and worked diligently on the proposed changes before you today. I'm a past president of the Alaska Society of CTAs, and I'm currently on the Uniform Accountancy Act Committee for the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy. Today, I am testifying as past board member and current member of the Alaska Society of CPAs. As Ms. Tarver discussed, the board has been working on these amendments for some time. The board, in concert with the American Institute of CPAs, the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, and the Alaska Society of CPAs, has conscientiously evaluated every change to ensure that they meet all the requirements that we feel are necessary to move the profession into the future and at the same time continue to protect the public's interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that testimony. Let's see. Representative Thompson, please feel free to come forward and present
Thank you again, Mr. Comment. Chair. I wanted to point out also that you also have online Sandon Fisher. He is the attorney that worked on this bill for the last several years, and also he's one that rendered the opinion about shall and may. he's online if necessary.
Thank you. Yeah, and for the committee's reference, also available for questions in addition to all the invited testifiers is Corey Hondolero, Executive Administrator of the Alaska Board of Public Accountancy. So that concludes invited testimony, and while we're at it, I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony, which was noticed for today. And there is no one showing up as online, and obviously no one in the room given our current circumstances, so I'm going to close public testimony. So that takes the bill, or Chair? Committee substitute of the bill. Yeah, Representative Clayman.
I had a question for Mr. Fisher.
Absolutely. Mr. Fisher, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Representative Clayman.
Thank you. So I appreciate your memorandum that addresses the use of may versus shall. I had a related question that isn't answered by the memorandum, and that's the practice within the statutes in other professions that have boards that provide the same role that the accountancy board does in this statute, and the use of may and shall. Like if I go and look at the engineer's licensing, at the bar for the lawyer's licensing, for architect's licensing, for massage therapy licensing, can you tell me what the practice is in statutes with the use of may and shall? Because I'm curious about that use, not just in the narrow world of this particular legislation, but what the practice is in other professions.
Representative Clayman, through the chair, Shannon Fisher with legal services for the record. My understanding, and I did not go back and closely review the differences in the words for different licensees. I looked through for accountants before writing this memo, as that's what I was specifically thinking about. My understanding is that the use of the word may or shall would be different depending on the intention of the legislature at that time and drafting practices. I would be happy to look in further and reach out to you with more information about how often it's used in one type of license versus another one, but I'm not prepared to comment on that right now.
Question for the chair.
Yeah.
What's our path on moving this bill?
Depends on the will of the committee, but I think the question you're asking is a good one, and I wouldn't be half surprised if Representative Eastman has been researching this very question the last 15 minutes. But depending on what legislative, legal, or the sponsor's office might be able to provide in terms of other professional licensing customs, if we're going to resolve that question and the committee feels good.
I mean, was the original plan to move the bill today?
No.
Oh, if there's no plan to move the bill today, then what I would like before the next hearing, and I totally understand what Mr. Fisher is saying, that at some level this is the policy choices of the legislature at the time, but I'm just interested what are the statutes actually show that the legislature has decided, because if the routine process is for the language to say may issue a license, and that's pretty uniform in statutes, I'd like to know that. I don't think we can just look at the accountant's statute alone to get a sense, and I don't think there's one right answer, and maybe the answer is half the time they say half the time they may say shall. But I'd like to have at least a sampling of that, and I'm thinking somewhere between, I'll leave it up to Mr. Fisher, but I'm thinking I'd like to see 6 to 10 different professions about how they approach the may shall question. And I won't be, if he comes up with 5, I probably won't be object, but I'd like to see a little bit more of a sampling. Thank you.
That makes sense, and I think I have a similar curiosity and see some head nodding as well. So perhaps Mr. Fisher, Mr. Thompson, we can all coordinate on that. As far as timeline, what I was going to suggest for the committee, depending on where everybody at, is that we have an amendment deadline of close of business tomorrow, and that we could potentially take up any amendments depending on what comes forward from the committee and consider everything and move the legislation on Thursday. But that's dependent on where people are at and if there's robust desire to amend this legislation, and I don't want to assume anything, because I know there's lots of amendment interest from different members. But with the bill before us now as a whole, for the sponsor for invited testifiers, other questions from the committee?
Is that one question from Representative Eastman should go first.
Okay. Representative Eastman.
If it's on the same topic, I'll defer. I have a different topic.
Okay.
On the same topic, Mr. Fisher, is it in the realm that you could get back to us by midday tomorrow with my query?
Representative Clayman, through the chair, again, Shannon Fisher for the record, I will do my very best to get back to you in a timely manner. Obviously, I can't practice or promise anything with our priority policy, but I will do my very best to respond as soon as possible.
Okay.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. So a question was raised, which I haven't heard any discussion on, and that deals with Section 26. It also will involve Section 40. But starting with Section 26, so we have a change here on line 29. This is page 11. And we're removing the context of financial statements from this section. I'm not entirely sure why we're doing that. So I guess, is there someone who can speak to why the financial statements framing is being removed from line 29?
And just once more for my reference, what were the two sections you referenced?
Section 26 and Section 40.
Okay.
And these deal with the issuance of reports.
I'm going to start with staff to the sponsor, Lynette Burge. Ms. Burge, if you can hear us, do you have any insight to Representative Eastman's question?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and House State Affairs Committee members. Thank you again for hearing our bill this afternoon. I really don't have an answer to that question, so I would like to defer probably to one of the board members.
Well, we'll start with perhaps Karen Brewer-Tarver. Ms. Brewer-Tarver, do you have any insight, or if not, is there another invited testifier you would commend us to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, again, for the record, I'm Karen Tarver. And so the reason we're taking out the words or proposing to take out the words on financial statements is that the industry has moved beyond issuing reports only on financial statements, and there now are what's called attest services. Those are ones where we're issuing an opinion that are on reports that are not financial statements. And so this is basically, if we left it and it left the wording saying issuing reports on financial statements, we would be excluding a service that's currently provided by CPAs.
Thank you. And then I suppose I'll have a question for the drafter then.
I believe that's Mr. Fisher. Mr. Fisher, well, he's online. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. Mr. Fisher, I am looking at sections 26 and 40, and I see where, you know, we're now requiring that someone hold a license if they're going to issue a report, not just on financial statements, but any report on behalf of another person or a governmental unit. And I understood what that line meant back when we had framed it in the context of financial statements, but I see that we're removing that context, and I see that in Section 40 we're removing that context as well, so that if someone is issuing a report, again, not just on financial statements, but simply a report without any, you know, scope limitations on what kind of report that would be. And I'm wondering, is this changing the number of people who may be required to have a license? I noticed that when we are looking in Section 41, we specifically talk about attesting functions, but we don't limit the definition of the word report to those attesting functions or compilation services. And so I am concerned, since the statute's going to limit things that are now not currently limited, how broad are we going? And is there somewhere else in this statute, or is there a way we can make sure and tie that back down to the context of financial statements, either somewhere else in the bill, or is there another statute I'm not referring to that would make sure that even though we're taking out the context of financial statements, that this is still in the context of, say, accountancy, broadly speaking, at least. Thank you.
Representative Eastman, through the chair, again, Shannon Fisher, for the record with Legal Services. As you point out, in Section 40, the practice of accounting is updated so that the term financial statement is removed from reports, thus making it broader. I note on line 18 of page 18, practice of accounting still requires the use of accounting or auditing skills. The reports would presumably need to relate to accounting or auditing skills. And then section 41, beginning on line 23, report when used with reference to a test function or compilation service means, and then this statute fleshes out the meaning of report. So it's correct that the term has become broader because we're taking financial statements and changing, you know, taking that out. If it's the committee's will, the committee could always provide additional clarification for what those functions are. And to some extent, again, this is done in Section 41 with the definition of report and Section 40 with the practice of public accounting. And to answer your question, report still needs to be in relation to accounting, because in our definition it's accounting or auditing skills, and then report does have a definition in the statute that, again, if it's the committee's will, could be fleshed out further if the committee felt there was something desired.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
So as I'm now in Section 41 with you, and there's a definition of report when it's used in a specific context. Now, I don't see that the report in Section 26 is used with reference to an attest function or compilation service. So does that definition of report, is that binding on the report we find in page 11, line 29? If so, how is it binding?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, again, Shannon Fisher for the record. In that situation, if report is not made with reference to an attest function, that section would not apply to the report. Practice of accounting in Section 40 would still apply to this draft or this bill, making at the least the report needing to be related to an accounting or auditing skill in this situation. And to the extent that there's not an attest function, then the term report could be more ambiguous. But still, I believe, would be required to be related to an accounting or auditing skill. And again, that's something that if the committee wanted to clarify what constitutes a report, what other type of accounting work this constitutes, that's something the committee could definitely do.
Follow up. Thank you. So, and I see your intent, and I see that the sponsor's intent seems to match what you're describing, but I'm still looking for why it is that you say that the report on line 29 is limited in its scope. I see, you know, on the face that it says only a person who holds a valid license may do the following, issue a report. Previously it was dealing with financial statements. Now it's just any kind of report, at least in this statute. And so point me, please, to where, either in the bill or somewhere else, where it is making clear that that report is going to, say, deal with an attesting function, for example.
Again, Representative Eastman, through the chair, in Section 26, line 29, we're in the context of a person who holds a valid license, practice privilege, or permit in the state, may issue a report. The person that holds the license, practice privilege, or permit is going to be practicing accounting, so I believe that the context of this section would limit the term report to something related to an accounting function. Again, Section 41, if the report is not related to an attest function, I agree that section may not provide clarification with respect to what a report is, depending on whether the report relates to an attest function or not. But primarily from context, for Section 26, that the report would still need to relate to an accounting or auditing function as defined in Section 40, I believe, and not report in Section 41.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Maybe I'll have this direct this question to Ms. Tarver or whomever among the invited testifiers, if there is material reason for the modified and slightly broadened, seemingly, definition of report. Ms. Tarver?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for the record, again, this is Karen Tarver of Juneau. And as shared previously, the definition in Section 41 for report, I guess to provide a little bit of background, within our profession, the ability to issue reports, basically, we only issue reports as a CPA when we've done what's called an attest function or a compilation service. And so it used to be that those attest functions, so audit and review is the two services that fall under the attest function. And it used to be that audits and reviews were only done on financial statements. That has now expanded and can be done on other types of, basically on system operational controls. We now have another service that we provide as CPAs that falls under the attest function, where we're giving an opinion on the internal controls of an entity. And so it's still considered an attest report when we issue that, but it's not on financial statements.
Ms. Tarver, so the internal operational controls, I forget what the sequence of words you used is, but basically how an organization functions, is that more or less what you're saying in more lay language?
Mr. Chair, it's a specific engagement that we would have to be engaged to do, and I can only think of the abbreviation right now, but it's a SOC report. It's a system of operational controls. That's what it is. So it's a SOC report, and when engaged to do that type of report, you're typically looking at the internal controls and opining actually on the internal controls of that entity.
Thank you. And I'm just going to have one last question, which is kind of prompted by the may versus shall memo, and that is there any instance that you're aware of, and actually, I might ask this of Corey Hondolero of the Alaska Board of Accountancy, Executive Administrator. Any instance in which you're aware of in which the board has declined to issue a certificate to someone who meets all the statutory criteria?
For the record, this is Corey Hondolero, the Executive Administrator for the Alaska Board of Public Accountancy, and I'm representing the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And in response to that question, in my time with this board specifically and with the division licensing other professions, I have not seen where a board or program staff have declined to renew a license when all requirements have been met.
And as a follow-up question, is there any reason that you see, any value you see in the board having discretionary authority versus perhaps the word shall being written into the statutes and the board shall issue a certificate if all the legal criteria are satisfied by that applicant?
I might defer to the chair on that one. In my personal opinion, and I did go through after the last committee hearing and look at the statutes, and there is instances of both throughout. And I do believe there are other instances in other professions the same type of language is used. I'll defer to the chair, but I don't think the board would be held up on the change of that word to shall for that type of license.
Okay, thank you. And I'm just trying to keep straight who's the chair. Is that Leslie Schmitz or Ms. Tarver?
Yes, to the chair. Leslie Schmitz is the current chair of the State Board of Accountancy.
Ms. Schmitz, over to you for that last question, if there's reason from your perspective why we should retain discretionary authority for the State Board versus opting for the word shall.
So for the record, this is Leslie Schmitz. I'm the chair of the State Board of Public Accountancy. And in my almost 8 years on the board, I also have not experienced that if a licensee or an applicant met all of the statutory requirements that we would have, that we would deny the license. And I certainly, sometimes it can be a project to make sure that the applicant or the licensee meets the all of the requirements, because things aren't always a straight line. But in my experience, I've never seen that we haven't, once they've met those requirements.
And what is your opinion on the value or non-value of the board retaining discretionary authority or foregoing discretionary authority?
This is Leslie Schmitz again for the record. I think since we never have, it could be shall rather than may, but I guess it always, you're always thinking about the one situation where the board may need to have some discretion on that, although we do fall back to, if they've met all of the statutory requirements, then we would issue them a license.
Thank you. And I'm just going to ask this question to one last testifier, Tom Neal, given a more 50-state comparative perspective. Mr. Neal, can you provide any your wisdom on the merits of may versus shall in this legislation?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the committee. This is Thomas Neal. In my experience here on the Washington State Board of Accountancy, we have a similar may-shall situation. And there have been times where we've had to consider an applicant's, I guess, worthiness, if you will, due to a good character issue or some other side issue apart from meeting the legal requirements that might cause us to not grant the license. Whether there's pending issues, maybe there's a peer review problem, or something has come up. But we have, you know, and I've seen other states use the may to give the board the discretion on the off chance that they need to turn around and say no. It is possible that you could have a firm that meets the legal requirements, but there is an issue that pops up that is one of those that you would prefer to hold issuing the license until that matter is resolved versus having a criteria in the statute that mandates that that license be issued.
Thank you. Representative Clayman.
Thank you very much. Give me an example of something that isn't in the statute that might cause you to want to hit pause for a period while the matter is resolved before you issue the license. Something more, something that something might be, but tell me something specific that might fit that description.
I'll see if I can come up with one here. We had a situation here in Washington where we had a firm that met the legal requirements, but we did have, aside from the firm license question, we had an individual partner in that firm who had a pending complaint against him. And the, depending upon how that complaint was going to play out, could have impacted the ability then to license the firm. So we sometimes run into those kinds of issues. I think discretion on the part of a well-meaning board it does give them the ability then to hit the pause button as need be to see what the play out is. And again, the goal behind all of those types of provisions is at the end of the day is to protect the public interest, to make sure that the public interest isn't potentially harmed by having to blindly follow forward with a shall type of situation, but to give them a little bit of the ability to pause.
Follow up. In that instance you described in Washington where the one of the members of the firm had a complaint against them, how did you resolve that application question? Did you delay things for a period, give them a shorter term license while the matter got resolved? What was the approach?
In this situation, the way that played out with the complaint against the partner, that was ultimately fairly quickly resolved and so we were able to proceed with the licensure question without any problem. I haven't, in my 9 years on the board here, apart from that one situation, much as you've heard before, we haven't had any other situations arise. Normally, when firms come forward, they've met the requirements. They've got, you know, good moral character, whatever you want to say in that setting. There aren't any issues that would preclude licensure. But, again, it would give the board the ability to hit pause if need be.
Thank you. And I'm going to take one last question from Representative Eastman, and then I think we'll table this bill and contemplate next action. Representative Vance, were you also in the queue? So I'll take a question from Representative Vance, and Representative Eastman, maybe we can save for the next time this bill's up, just to distribute opportunity. Representative Vance, final question.
Thank you for that. And the reason that I wanted to slide this in is because it's in for Mr. Fisher so that he could have time to get back to us. I've just been looking at the consistency in the bill of the word may and shall. And on page 2, may renew, the word may is used in the renewal, and the word shall is used when granting the initial permit, except on page 3, line 10, the board shall renew a permit. And so I was wondering why the change from may renew to shall renew in section 7. So if Mr. Fisher could have a response back to us, you know, either right now or by the next committee, that would be helpful information.
Yeah, let's hear from Mr. Fisher and see if he has a quick response. Mr. Fisher.
Yes, Representative Vance, through the chair. The first thing I'd point out is that this bill is amending different licenses and permits, primarily licenses issued to individual CPAs and then permits issued to firms. So you correctly pointed out in 804.195D, which is a license, we use the word may. In section 5, on page 2, I believe, we're talking about issuing a permit to a firm, which the statute uses the word shall. Those words, as pointed out in the memo, have been in statute prior to this bill and were not changed. And then could you remind me of the last section? Was that page 3 that you were asking, Michelle? I apologize.
Yes, page 3, line 10.
Did you hear that citation, Mr. Fisher?
Mr. Chair, yes. Sorry, I'm getting there. One moment, please.
Okay.
And again, this is Shannon Fisher for the record. Representative Vance, through the chair, page 3, line 10 is another amendment to 0804240, and the word shall is used consistently through 0804240, and that's why the word shall is used there. And again, the first instance of may was with respect to a different license.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. And for the comparative research, I'll leave it to Representative Clayman and the sponsor and potentially Representative Vance to tease out what's done in different professions. I want to set an amendment deadline of Monday at close of business next week for amendments on this legislation. But if that creates heartburn with anybody, please let me know.
I'm sure. Are we going to get a chance to hear from our national witness again before that deadline?
We can try to make that happen.
Great,
we can try to make that happen. So I want to get to House Bill 106, even if it's just a quick introduction, as they've been bumped once already. And we have from the Department of Public Safety, Randy Brieger and Kathy Monfreda. And we also have the lights dimmed. And I think we'll start with Ms. Monfreda. I think any initial comments while we pull up the slide deck?
Mr. Chairman, I think Randy Brieger was going to make some introductory comments.
Okay, great. Randy Brieger, please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Randy Brieger with the Department of Public Safety for the record. Thank you so much. I know you guys only have a few minutes left, but we would be happy to start our presentation for House Bill 106. I believe in your packets you should have a bill sponsor letter from the governor, but in interest of time, we're not going to read through or highlight those. You also have a sectional analysis and our presentation, and then just earlier this week, we sent a set of statistics that we thought would be helpful to the committee as we move through the conversation about the changes that we're proposing in this bill. The bill is a pretty simple set of changes, and the presentation is really going to kind of line it out for you all. I think with that, like I said, in the interest of time, I think we'll just turn it over to Director Monfreda, and we can dive right in. For our understanding, are we going until right till 4 o'clock, Mr. Chairman?
I think let's go through to the 55 or so and see how many slides we get through.
Thank you so much, sir.
So I think we're on slide number one, and for your reference, Mr. Stepp is able to advance the slides as you direct.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, this is Catherine Monfreda. I'm the Director of the Division of Statewide Services for the Department of Public Safety, and I thank you for hearing our presentation of this bill. This bill brings state law into conformity with federal law as it pertains to the reporting of missing persons between the ages of 18 and 21. Slide two, federal law, specifically Suzanne's law, was enacted in 2003, and a portion of the Adam Walsh Act enacted in 2006 collectively require law enforcement agencies to enter information pertaining to missing persons under the age of 21 into the National Crime Center, Crime Information Center, NCIC database within 2 hours. Suzanne's law was named after Susan Lyall, a student at the State University of New York at Albany who disappeared in 1998 and was never found. Adam Walsh was a 5-year-old boy who was abducted from a Sears department store in Florida in 1981. His head was found 2 weeks later in a drainage ditch. Slide three. The current statutory language, Alaska's laws pertaining to the reporting of missing persons have not been amended since they were enacted in the mid and late 1980s. Today, Alaska Statute 1865-620 requires law enforcement to report missing minors to the state's missing person clearinghouse if not located within 48 hours of being reported missing. Alaska Statute 4710-141 requires the reporting of missing minors to state and national databases within 24 hours after a missing person is completed, missing person report is completed, and Alaska Statute 4710-380 defines runaway minor as a, being a person under the age of 18 years. Next slide, four. This slide summarizes the proposed changes which will conform with the federal law pertaining to missing persons under the age of 21, specifically that all reported missing persons under the age of 21 rather than 18 are entered into the state and national databases within 2 hours as opposed to the current state requirement of 24 hours. Next slide. For informational purposes, training is already in place regarding the more restrictive federal requirements, and most state and local law enforcement agencies are already complying with the more restrictive federal requirement. Programming of the state database, APSIN, has been completed as well to accommodate the more restrictive requirements. Next slide. The benefits of enacting this law are to remove conflicting and less restrictive statutory requirements, achieving a faster state and nationwide notification for missing persons under the age of 21, and the improved response for the vulnerable college-age population. Once entered into the national systems, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is notified automatically and proactively offers assistance in these investigations. Next slide. For a sectional analysis, real quickly, Section 1 removes the reference to AS 4710-141 in Alaska Statute 1865-620 since the time required for the entering of missing persons into APSIN and NCIC would now be specified in 1865-620. Section 2 adds a new subsection to 1865-620 to specify that law enforcement agencies must report a missing person under the age of 21 to absent an NCIC within 2 hours of completing the report, and they must remove that information not later than 24 hours after learning that the person has been located. And finally, Section 3 amends AS 4710-141, subparagraph A, to remove the language pertaining to the time of entry and time of removal from the state and national databases, since that would now be specified in 1865-620. The bill has no specific specified effective date, so it would become effective 90 days after becoming law. That concludes our presentation. I thank you for your time. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Monfredo, for the presentation. We'll take one question and call it a day, but we'll bring this back before the committee, of course. Any questions from the committee? Maybe not, so we'll just call it a day. That's a dazzlingly comprehensive presentation. Thank you very much to the department for bringing this forward. So we'll notice when House Bill 106 will be back before us. As a reminder, that we've got House Bill 103 from the Governor-Assisted Living Home House Rules and House Bill 118 regarding prisoner access and access to computers will be up before us on Thursday. I previously noted Saturday would be a game time decision. We will not be meeting this coming Saturday, but we'll be in dialogue about future weekend meetings. And thank you very much to Sophia, Recording Secretary, and Tom in the back of the room with the LIO, and Mr. Stepp for facilitating all things with the committee. And at 3:54, we are adjourned.